If you had to guess how many Americans don't have a basic bank account, what number would you guess? A couple million? Well, how about more like approximately 70 million? As The Atlantic's Derek Thompson writes, that's more people than live in California, New York, and Maryland combined, more people than voted for Barack Obama or Mitt Romney in the 2012 presidential election. That's 70 million Americans who do not have access to traditional banking services. And for them, being poor means that money itself is expensive. Derek Thompson joins us now from NPR in New York to explain. Hi there, Derek.
Hi there.
So what do we mean when we say money itself is expensive for people who don't have access to traditional banking?
The first thing to say is that that 70 million number applies not only to people who don't have a bank account, that's I think a little bit lower, but also people who don't have access to the kind of traditional banking services that a lot of other Americans sort of take for granted. And if it's okay, I'll sort of start by talking about my own experience, which I don't think is unusual, and I think it's probably the experience of most people listening on this show. You know, I have a bank account, I have direct deposits, I have automatic payments, I can easily transfer money from my bank account to other people's accounts, I can do it on my phone. My balance is two clicks and a password away. You know, making money is hard, but banking isn't so hard. But there's millions of people who have none of this. Instead of a direct deposit, they rely on physical pay stubs. Instead of checking accounts, they have to drive to check cashing services like Pay-O-Matic, which cost money. Instead of automatic payments, they have to drive again across the suburbs to pay their utility bills in person. So replacing the services of a bank on your own becomes a second part-time job, really. It's an odyssey that takes you through these storefronts and these strip malls and prepaid cars and miles on the road.
Right. So not only is there just the direct cost in terms of all the fees associated with using these alternative financial services, but there's the cost in terms of your time. And this issue is at the heart of a new documentary that you write about in The Atlantic. It's called Spent, Looking for Change. It was produced by American Express and aired at the Aspen Ideas Festival in June, and it profiles a number of people who have to go through this financial odyssey, as you call it. And one of them is this couple, Alex and Melissa, who were doing pretty well until Alex was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis and had to quit his job. And in the documentary, we see how having to live on cash has had an impact on Melissa and Alex's day-to-day life, such as you said, Melissa has to drive to different places to pay the bill. So let's listen.
On payday, it's getting to the places so I can get the bills paid on time.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I'm here to pay the power.
So Melissa says also that she has to use, what, a quarter to a half a tank of gas just driving around paying bills each month. That only adds to the cost of essentially being poor.
Right. Melissa and Alex are a really interesting and tragic story. Because here you have a two-income household that was beset by sequential tragedies. You had Alex, the husband, diagnosed with MS. Within a few weeks, their son was diagnosed with rather severe autism, and it requires a lot of money in order to treat these medical problems. These are two people that didn't make any capital M mistakes. It was circumstances beyond their control that pushed them to desperation. And so now they rely on cash. And as a result, they have to spend half of their day driving around and making sure that everything is being paid on time as much as possible. Mm-hmm. One of the saddest things that I saw in the case of Melissa and Alex is they visited a payday lender. They had to get a $450 loan. It says later at the end of the documentary that they paid $1,700 in fees on that $450 loan, $1,700 before their neighbors bailed them out. So these are sort of the cycles of negative reinforcement that happens when you're forced to cobble a life together outside of the traditional banking system.
Right. And you write in your piece in The Atlantic that this kind of goes against one of the fundamental principles of progressive economics, as you call it, that basically in the United States, we have so many services that are designed to make life for poor Americans easier and cheaper. I mean, you mentioned there's Medicaid for medical care, food stamps for food, children, families with children can receive tax credits, etc. But we haven't seen that same push to make life easier and cheaper when it comes to financial services. Why not?
It truly does seem backward. It seems like we have built this entire apparatus from the federal government standpoint that says life should be easier if you're poor. We have enough money to build a progressive system that can help you out if you aren't fortunate enough to make a lot of money. But just as you said, the banking system seems to be the opposite. It is more expensive to be poor. And that just to me strikes me as somewhat grossly unfair, and which is why I was really excited to see the documentary and learn a little bit more about some of the services that are being created in order to help these people create a banking-type experience online.
Right. And I'm going to talk to you about that in a second. But I also note, I mean, you just have so many great and disturbing facts in your piece that unbanked families spend 10% of their money replacing traditional banking services. That's as much as most families spend on food. I mean, it's just remarkable to hear those numbers presented so plainly. But Derek, let me ask you, I mean, this documentary that we're talking about was produced by American Express, the credit company, the credit card company. I mean, it would seem that seems a little strange to me, because don't you think they're in the business of trying to get people like to get in more credit, and they maybe don't want necessarily folks to go to traditional banking services?
True. That's a really good point. I mean, I think you're right. We should totally be upfront about the fact that this is a documentary produced by a company that is in the finance industry. You know, American Express has its own services, its own apps that directly try to help unbanked Americans approximate some of the functions of a banking system, so that they can, you know, they can take money online, have it on their phone, use it to make automatic payments, a lot of the things that we take for granted if we belong to a Wells Fargo or a Bank of America. One of the things that you find when you sort of go into this issue is that the Wells Fargos and the Banks of America are closing branches in parts of the country that have a lot of low-income Americans. And so there just aren't a lot of bank branches there. And so you have a very tenuous grasp on these low-income families who are just entirely outside of the traditional banking system. We have the technological tools, essentially, to replace a lot of these services on our smartphones, because we don't have to drive to our smartphones. They're always on our bodies. So if we can find ways to have apps and have technological solutions to this banking problem, I think it could be a really wonderful thing.
Derek Thompson writes about unbanked Americans in The Atlantic. Derek, thanks so much.
Thank you.